that's right, friends. It is a shot on Saturday here at the Sports Brew. We were going to do a breakfast brew. Didn't happen. I think Matt Schaub tried to intervene and it got intercepted by the defense somewhere along the line. So then it was going to pick six into a lunch. Didn't happen. But that's okay. It is the afternoon. It is winding down. Well, winding up, I guess, for us. But we're here. We're in the basement. We're large. We're in charge. And that's right. If I'm going to bust that out,
large in charge,
you better bet your earth that I am joined by the one and only, the mighty degenerate. What did I call you the other week? The mighty Aphrodite or something like that? The one and only Mark D. Thomas, a.k.a. our resident degenerate statistician, the gambler with a fallback plan, covering the spread, some way, somehow, the over, the under, the man with the woo. What is up, baby?
Chilling, sir. Doing good.
All right, hit your cue. You ready? Here you go. Woo! I'm proud of you. You did that well. You did that so well. I'm going to go ahead and give you a take brew. Take two. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. Degenerate style, baby. A little Deftones. I know you love some Deftones.
I do.
Good, 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 good. Well, look, the Twitter Terminator is off in Baltimore, so we have to represent on our own accord. We hope you're having fun up there, Shannon, whatever the heck you're doing. I don't know, handling some business. We are also handling our own business down here in the basement. And I guess since I did drop a little bit of ugliness on Matt Schaub to start off the podcast with, it's only fair because he's been dropping ugly and stank all over the place as quarterback for the Texans. Now, look, I'll tell you, quite blunt, I didn't think they were going to beat the 49ers. Let's be clear about that. Okay. But I think most people were looking for a little bit of a turnaround with how they were running that offense. Obviously, San Francisco, a tremendously a strong defense when they're playing as the way they should. And I think you've seen over the past couple of weeks San Francisco kind of get away from this stuff they were doing with Kaepernick with the offense. Obviously, it worked in week one versus Green Bay. But you saw the limitations of that team when they went away from what their identity is. And as far as I'm concerned, as it stands right now with Colin Kaepernick and his progression and the weapons they have on offense, which is a little bit limited outside of Vernon Davis and Anquan Boldin, they don't have but so many options. So I really think it's crucial for them to get back to what they do best, which is beat them up, power, blood and guts football, wear you down with defense, and, you know, a power run game. And you've seen them transition after those first couple of weeks, particularly after the loss to the Colts, and kind of get back to who they needed to be.
Oh, absolutely.
And the Texans game was absolutely classic, beat the crap out of you, 49ers.
Yeah, that's basically, I mean, 49ers playing at their top level like they should be, and Houston just playing meltdown, we suck royally right now, football, perfect storm, a disaster.
Yeah, you know? It's certainly, Houston's in a really big bind right now. And I think this has been true for the past couple of years. They have a roster that's good enough to make some noise and good enough to make a run, but not good enough to really put people away or seal the deal. You know, they've kind of been treading in this, we're good to above average good, and we can threaten you, but we're not elite good. They have elite talent in some spots. You look at what Arian Foster has been. Obviously, he's not primetime stomping everybody, Arian Foster, at the moment. But he's looking better, kind of a slow start to the season. But you can see some progression there, right, with him. But the team has dysfunction on it. The team has dysfunction. Some of that absolutely is Matt Schaub. Now, you have to be fair. There was a nice breakdown of that play. Most people are going to think of, obviously, the pick sixes. And this is the fourth straight week where Matt Schaub has thrown an interception that turns into a pick six. That itself is an NFL record. That is a horrible NFL record to have, but he's got his name all over that bad boy right now. Some of that he has to own it. There's no doubt about that. Some of that he has to own it. Look, they lost 34-3 against the Niners. They did not play well. Okay, and keep in mind, you think 34-3, Kaepernick only completed six passes. By the way,
only threw 15. 113 yards.
Yeah, 6 of 15, 113 yards and a touchdown, and a big old chunk of that went to Vernon Davis, who had
64 yarder to Davis, yeah.
Yeah, that 64, and you know, the game was kind of getting out of hand. That was just like the icing on the cake to be like, thanks for stopping in, Houston. You know?
Grind it in a little deeper.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and take that knife and just kind of turn it in a wound. You know, but part of it, getting back to Schaub, is, yes, he needs to be playing better. There's no doubt about that. But understand this. When you talk about the changes with the 49ers from the beginning of the year to what they're doing, that's a schematic adjustment. That's an identity. That's getting back to what you do well fundamentally. And Houston, fundamentally, that is a team that needs a strong run game, strong defense. You get your play action. You set up Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub, to me, does not set the rest of that team up. That team sets up Matt Schaub, if that makes sense. And that's actually, to me, very true for Colin Kaepernick. What you saw early in the year was they were trying to throw too much. There's too many limitations. No Crabtree and, you know, the injuries they have. They needed to do what they do best and take some of the pressure off of Colin Kaepernick. Okay, he's not developed enough, in my opinion, as a passer, reading the field, particularly with that complement of weapons that they have right now, which, again, is limited. It's not a bear cupboard, but, you know, they're going to be much better late in the year if Crabtree and Manningham are healthy and back.
Correct.
Then maybe you can unleash a little bit more of that. But bottom line with Schaub, I don't think he can carry the team. I don't think he's that kind of quarterback. This is also an issue that you may see a little bit with Matt Ryan in Atlanta. You know what I mean? Moments where they can do it, but they need some help to really be fully effective. I'm a little disappointed, though, I guess on some level, with how they've been game, essentially managing the game with Schaub. And this, I think, has to fall on the coaching staff. And I'm going to go back to a particular play. I was listening to a lot of breakdowns, a lot of analysis, and the play that likes to, you know, people like to come up and bring up is the one against the Seahawks that Richard Sherman, you know, picked off and ran back for the touchdown, and that pretty much, you know, thanks for playing, Houston. Let's go ahead and end this for you. Thanks. That was a terrible play call. Was it a bad play, bad throw? Absolutely. Was it executed poorly? Absolutely. But why on earth, if you have a struggling quarterback and you have a smart defense that understands tendencies, which Seattle does, are you going to do something like that where you're asking your quarterback to essentially throw blind? Because that's what that play was designed to do.
Right.
You know, you want him to essentially turn and throw without being able to read and see what's going on over there. You know, the instant that ball is leaving his hand, you know he's like, crap. Okay? So it's a bad throw by Schaub. It's a bad decision by Schaub. He should have just eaten it. At the same token, to be fair, and to really see the bigger picture, the coaching staff in Houston, to me, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, has gotten stale. They've gotten predictable. Teams know that offense. You've got a limited Andre Johnson. You've got, you know, obviously a young wide receiver opposite of him. They've got some issues. Matt Schaub is not an elite caliber guy to carry and get through all that. You need to put him in a better position to succeed. That may not happen. Maybe his confidence is shot and he's going to continue to play ugly. But this is a schematic issue. You see the adjustment from the Niners. And if Houston is going to dig themselves out of this hole, they have a good defense and they have some opportunity. But that offensive, you know, coordinator and Kubiak and whoever else is responsible for all of this needs to think, you know, some forward thinking here. Get ahead of the curve, because right now you guys are behind it. It's killing you. It's killing you. And I for the life of me, I just hate to see, you know, whatever. I don't know how long Arian Foster is going to be relevant, good, and et cetera. But it's the same way I feel about, like, somebody like Jones-Drew. It's like, hey, come on, man. You know, of course, it's worse for Jones-Drew in Jacksonville. Let's be real.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Houston's been good, and they have not gotten over the hump. And you kind of hate to see situations like that where you know you've got somebody with legit talent that just gets wasted.
Well, how about the one question, certainly, that's getting passed around all the media? And if I'm guessing, I bet we're on the same page with this. But how about the question of is Schaub the quarterback that should remain the starter for the remainder of the season?
Well, unless you're planning to go with T.J. Yates, their options are a little bit limited.
They are.
Their options are a little bit limited. Now, there may be a point in time that if Schaub cannot shake the INTs and he's living in the land of the Ryan Leaf Memorial Failhorn. Yeah, there you go. If he is living there, I mean, there's no way you can keep pick six in your team. I mean, it's hard to imagine that would happen every week.
Right.
You know, I mean, what's the likelihood that's going to be the case? It's very low. Very low. But
seriously,
if Schaub is going to continue to suck the butt and do those kind of things, you can't essentially put your team in a position where you know your quarterback is compromising the game and your team's ability to get on.
Correct.
You know, there will be a point in time. He did get pulled in that game, but really it was out of hand at that point. I don't know how much different. I mean, T.J. Yates was not going to come in there and light up the 49ers.
No.
It just wasn't going to happen. But if the Texans are going to have success, they need to do what the 49ers did, which is get back to your identity, understand what you do best, and get back to trying to out-scheme people and, you know, really leveraging your strengths. Okay, for the 49ers, that's not asking Kaepernick to throw it 40 times a game.
Correct.
Particularly with what they have on offense right now. And in Houston, they need to find a way to maybe break some of the trends that other defense. And look, there are defenders that have come out and said they know what they're doing. Okay? Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But if they believe that they do, and if the results on the field show that they do, then that coaching staff needs to do something different. Now, next year, they'll have some options, you know what I mean, as far as dealing with Schaub. But sure. For right now, they're hitched to him. I'm hard-pressed to see it being like, all right, Yates party, let's go.
Nah.
Let's roll. I mean, if you do that, is that essentially a concession of the season?
Yeah, it would seem to be. I have a hard time viewing it otherwise. And I don't know about you. I'm partially, yes, because he's a UVA product, but I'm a Schaub fan. And obviously, it's bad luck. I mean, bad decisions. I mean, he has to take some responsibility, but I mean,
right.
Crazy the whole, four games in a row with a taint. that's crazy in a lot of ways. But I root for him, and I kind of like Houston. Andre Johnson, full strength is one of the best in the league.
Yeah.
I really like their running game. I think I told you early in the season. I saw some stuff out of Ben Tate,
mm-hmm.
as the secondary back to Foster, but that was really impressed me. J.J. Watt and a handful of other strengths on defense, they're better than they're showing.
Oh, absolutely.
We all know that.
Yeah, they're absolutely better than what they've done at this point. And it's clear that they're not an elite-level team. I get that.
No,
but they are absolutely 100% better than what they've been putting out on the field. And they need better production out of their offense, better production out of Matt Schaub, and they have to minimize some of these mistakes. And bar none, the coaching staff needs to put Schaub in a better position to execute that offense. And some of that's going to be play calling, and some of that, quite honestly, is going to be let's really think about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and some things that we can do to, snooker the defense. A little bit of misdirection, something, man. They have to do something else to just get some momentum.
Yeah.
Because this season could very easily get away from a team like the Texans, particularly in a division where, the Colts, they're not perfect, but the Colts have kind of that mojo where they're going to try to find a way to get it done. And you can see that. There's certain teams that they don't look like they get shaken, right? Russell Wilson, very calm, cool, collected under pressure, all right? That guy does not seem to get flustered no matter what the game situation is.
Nope.
Okay, it's a wonderful thing. Well, Andrew Luck is another guy that, even when that team has issues, it just feels like they're going to find a way to get it done. Those guys are in one category. Of course, on kind of the other end of the spectrum, you have like the Tony Romo crunch time issue. You've got the Matt Schaub issue. They're not quite the same, but you're talking about situational dysfunction, and there are certain teams that just don't handle certain things very well, not from a consistent basis.
Right.
And right now the Texans don't, and they need to get that resolved because the defense is too good. They have enough talent, enough weapons that if they flame out this year, I think you have to reboot from the quarterback position and either make a trade for somebody, go after somebody else. I'd be hard pressed to see, Schaub being able to survive, especially if the whole year turns into a complete meltdown.
Exactly.
Never know though. Never know. Do you have any other takeaways from the Texans game?
Not so much. I think we pretty well covered it. Be an interesting team to watch to see if they can turn it around. And I think they can. I think a lot of it is mental at this point for Schaub, obviously,
right.
Mental and play calling, like we talked about.
Right.
They've got to become a less a less obvious, you know, team on offense, and hopefully the play calling can fix that.
We'll see. I'm not sold on it, but they've got enough there. They ought to be able to do it. And if Kubiak and that offensive, you know, essentially just the offensive coaches and that staff, if they've got the metal to do it, they should be able to put that team in a better position. At that point, it's a matter of execution. But I think you walk a fine line when you start losing belief in each other and in what you can do. That's a very dangerous thing in team sports, especially if people start turning on, you know, let's just say theoretically Schaub. And I know they're sticking up and defending him, but you know, when that kind of stuff keeps happening, that gets into players' heads, man. Absolutely gets in their heads, and it's a damaging thing. Absolutely is a damaging thing.
Having said that.
Thanks, Jim. So, D-Stead, I have a little Captain and Coke on my end. A little 100 proof, man. That's always good. And what are you rocking with, my friend?
I'm rocking with my good old reliable King of Beers. Some Budweiser.
A little Budweiser, huh?
Yes,
well,
sir.
How about a little Hail to the King?
Hail to the King.
There you go. Little Avenged Sevenfold, Hail to the King. I bet they didn't know they'd be in a Budweiser spot on the Sports Brew, right?
You were ready. Maybe that's what they're going for. Yeah.
Maybe. I actually kind of like this song, man.
I do, too.
It's got a nice little kind of heavy little chug-a-chug-a-chug going on with that. Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Kind of like it. I'd go see them live.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Why not? I mean, unless the tickets were like $150, then I won't, but...
Sports Brew Road Trip?
Yeah, Sports Brew Road Trip, man. A little concert action.
Yes.
If they did this song for a match job, would it be like Hail to the Pick? Hail to the Taint?
I imagine it would be.
Yeah. Anyway, Hail to the King. That's right. Thank you, Avenged Sevenfold. Right. I'll let them go out with that again, too. Hell yeah. I like it. Well, let's bump through a couple of other games just for, you know, giggles and good measures here on this Super Shine On Saturday. I don't have a lot to say about the Jaguars and the Rams other than Justin Blackmon. If he's available in your fantasy league, you should pick him up because he'll probably get enough garbage stats to be relevant for you. I mean, what else do you take away from that game, man? You know, people have been sandbagging on the Jaguars. We know they're bad. Blaine Gabbert's not that great. I mean, it's just it's rough down there in Jacksonville. And then to lose Jokel with a fractured ankle, it's just like insult and injury. It's just unbelievable, man. That is a franchise in just disarray. And you look at them and you know it's bad, you know it's ugly, and I don't know, man. Is there any hope at all in Jacksonville?
Not really, but I'd say 60 seconds is long enough on the Jaguars and Rams game. That'll do.
Nice.
Let's be fair. I'm sorry, Jesse, but... Yeah.
Sorry, Jesse. That is the Jaguars, their first time ever that they start 0-5. So, Justin Blackmon, 5 receptions, 166 yards, and a touchdown. Best highlight of the day Jacksonville. I'll tell you, another game we don't need a lot of time with is probably the Chargers and the Raiders, which probably so few people actually saw. But that game started at like 11:30 Eastern time on Monday night.
That was an odd one. Monday morning football.
Monday morning football.
First East Coasters, but I watched it and I was thoroughly entertained. Anytime Philip Rivers goes down, I love it. So
I know you do like to pile on Philip Rivers and his rage faces, man.
I picked it. Our good old Sports Brew pick 'em.
That's good job. I did not. But Terrell Pryor started off very strong in that game, and I want to say that Oakland had a 17-0 lead at the half. So you got a situation. Both teams at this point are 2-3. I think one of my favorite moments is going to be with Charles Woodson getting, I want to say that's his 13th career defensive touchdown off of a Danny Woodhead fumble, getting that in. Ties him with Rod Woodson and Darren Sharper for the most all time. So that's good to see. I'm a fan of Woodson. You know, certainly his time in Oakland, and obviously people know I'm partial to the Green Bay Packers. They're my second team behind the Redskins. So I certainly thank him for his services up in Green Bay. But it's good to see that happen. And, you know, the Raiders are not a particularly good team, but they're also not a doormat. You know, they're young. They got a little feistiness in them. So, and the defense is okay. You know, and I'm really curious to see by the end of the year how Terrell Pryor looks. His mobility is critical. I mean, you can see the difference between, you know, what that offense looked like under Matt Flynn and what they look like with Pryor. Pryor, I think, is certainly much better. Dude has some size. He made some pretty throws. Was that was it Rod Streeter that had like that 40-ish yard bomb, like yes, early in that game?
That was Streeter, I believe. That was pretty.
Yeah. So I don't know how good they're going to be. They kind of, to me, the Jets and the Raiders are kind of in this mold where it's not that you have really high expectations for them. They've got holes in the roster, but they've got fight in them. They've got some spark in them, and they have enough players. And, kind of this deal, I don't want to say Geno Smith and Terrell Pryor are like the same quarterback. I don't think that's really a fair comparison. But I'm just very curious to see how both of these guys do. And I like the fact that both of those teams are going to make you earn, playing Denver. Nobody seems to stand a chance against them.
No.
I like that. I really want to see how those two teams kind of finish the year and how – Geno Smith looks over the duration, how Terrell Pryor looks over the duration of the season. I think there's some upside in the future with him. I really do.
Oh, very much so. I'm a big fan of what I've seen of Pryor. That was the first time I'd seen a full game with him. He obviously provides a spark. They've got some young talent at wide receiver. They're playing right now without McFadden and still getting a little bit of production from a couple guys, the running back, Jennings and it's Marcell Reese sometimes, and
yeah, they've had some injury issues with the running backs, obviously, and that's going to hurt them a little bit. But get
McFadden back. I mean, yeah. that'll certainly give a big boost to the running game. So
hey, if all else fails, McFadden can just do a halfback option, just throw a touchdown.
It's
right?
True.
So, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Raiders in the Super Bowl, ways away, but
no.
On the right path.
Raiders in the Super Bowl. What?
it's a ways away. But I'm saying they're on track. They're on track to improve for sure. Pryor provides a great spark.
Well,
it was a fun game. It was fun to watch the Raiders, which I'd say it's been a while since I think anybody could say that, especially for Raiders fans.
Yeah, no, they've played some very, very ugly football for several years. So I do think you're starting to see some dividends. And obviously that's a team that had to eat a lot of bad contracts and eat a lot of money. So cupboard was fairly bare. He had his own methodology for doing certain things. And, rest in peace, Mr. Davis.
Absolutely.
Had a hell of a run.
I'd say his methodology was your wide receiver that runs a 4.2 40. I want you.
I want you. There it is.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Pretty much. Anyway, both teams are 2-3. Look, AFC West has actually shaped up to be far more compelling as a division than I would have expected. Yes. We know what the Broncos are. I mean, I still look at them as really the best, the most complete team in the league. But that offense is just ridiculous. Offense is just scary ridiculous, which we know. They're going to get Champ Bailey back. That's going to help them a little bit. No, obviously, and we'll get to the Dallas-Denver game because that really was the game of the week. There's just no doubt about that. That was a barn burner. That was a lot of fun to watch. But the AFC West top down has really turned out to be a very compelling division, and it surprises me. I didn't have high expectations for the Chargers or certainly for the Raiders. I think the Chiefs have done a really nice job of handling their business. I did like the one – there was an article where Alex Smith was like, what's a game manager? I don't really know what that means. And it's like, why do people call me a game manager? And it's like, well, Alex Smith, it's because you're a game manager. You do what you're supposed to do, not too much on your shoulders, hand the ball off the right time, make the plays that are there, don't do anything crazy, handle your business. You're a game manager.
Right.
I mean, that's what that is. I mean, you are not Peyton Manning. You are not Drew Brees. We're hoping that Dwayne Bowe gets off the milk box and becomes a little bit more relevant over the course of the season.
Correct.
I don't know what a game manager means. I love that. Yeah, you do.
That's funny.
Alex Smith, you know what a game manager is. You are not fooling anybody, buddy. I'm telling you. That was a goofy one. Just kind of oddball. But, look, their defense is good. Obviously, Jamaal Charles is very good. I really think Andy Reid coming in there has – it's just been a nice blend of a lot of different things to get that franchise turned around. I think it's clear that they underachieved in certain capacities last year, and that offense was very limited. Now, they haven't really been tested as far as having to come from behind anybody yet. I think when we get to the Chiefs-Denver, I think we're going to see the difference between a game manager – and a high-level quarterback. That's my opinion.
They'll have to keep I mean, I know every team, you know, it's the theory of what you got to do when you play Denver is
right.
keep Peyton on the sideline for as long as possible.
Right.
Can't keep him on the sideline for 60 minutes. So,
no, that's just not going to happen. You know.
It's a really tough task, but it's right. I'm just saying it's, you know, I don't know. You give Peyton, you know, 10 minutes on the field, and I still think he can beat plenty of teams.
Yes!
That's killer, but it is what you have to try to do. So Kansas City, I can't remember if it was – I think it was the week before the Giants game, or maybe it was during the Giants game, where they struggled the most. I guess it probably wasn't the Giants game, but I saw them not be able to successfully get 3 third-and-ones, I think it was. You're not going to be able to get away with that against teams that can put up a lot of points.
No, you're not going to.
No,
they have to figure out certain areas to be more consistent. And, you know, that's a team that will play you close and can take advantage of certain things, particularly on defense. I mean, heck, they got a nice break early on in that Titans game when – I'm trying to remember the name of the guy, but there was a punt, and Damian Williams. And he essentially kicks the ball towards the end zone. Chiefs end up recovering. They get a touchdown, right? Yeah. I mean, that's a fluky thing. But that's a team that's getting some bounces their way, getting some breaks their way. But, you know, that game finishes 26-17. Yes, Chiefs 5-0. That's phenomenal. Chris Johnson gets his first touchdown of the year, by the way. Maybe that'll, you know, since he could care less about fantasy football players, at least that makes some of the fantasy players kind of happy.
Oh, yeah.
But still, the bottom line is that's a good break for the Chiefs. They're getting some good bounces.
They are.
They're getting some good bounces, and they're handling their business. It's not necessarily the prettiest football as far as, you know, when you look at Denver, there's kind of like this, that offense is just ridiculous to watch. They're on a whole different level. Not really fair to compare anybody to them. I mean, let's be honest. But, you know, the Chiefs are a good team. They're a tough team. And they play, you know, it's all the cliches, right? You know, play smart football, you know, run the ball, good defense. You know, they have a lot of cliches on them. They just do. But they're a solid team.
They are.
They're a solid team. You know, it's kind of like the Falcons. Not this year, because the Falcons are not solid this
year. I was like, wait a second.
It's kind of like the Falcons over the past couple of years where they, you know, they played smart football. They didn't really hurt themselves that much, and they were able to do enough that, you know, you get a break here, you get a break there. They're right in the mix of it. They'll stay with you, and then sometimes they can get you right at the end.
True.
And I think Kansas City is going to be a team. I'd be surprised at this point if they're not a wild card team. I don't see a realistic path for them to win that division.
True.
I mean, if they somehow split with Denver – and somebody else steals a game from Denver, okay. But the Chiefs are going to have a hell of a run for that to happen. But I'm at the point now, I've seen enough out of that defense, and I've seen enough out of their run game and some of these other things, their defense special teams, that I feel pretty comfortable looking at them as a wild card team in the AFC. And if anybody has to travel to Arrowhead, obviously that's a tough place to play.
Extremely.
But I like that. But, yeah, Alex Smith, dude. You've been in the league long enough. I think all of us know. Game manager. We're not going to, like, who was the guy for the Buccaneers all those years ago when they won the Super Bowl? I know I can't think of his name. Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. Trent Dilfer. Trent freaking Dilfer. Now, that guy was a game manager, but he was a crappy game manager. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, if you gave me the choice between Alex Smith and, like, Trent Dilfer, I'll take Alex Smith. Don't get me wrong. Although I think Dilfer may have had a better deep ball. Maybe. He definitely had more arm strength, in my opinion. How on earth are we stuck between a comparison between Trent freaking Dilfer and Alex Smith?
That's a good question.
What?
Very good.
That is incredible.
No, it's not incredible. It's crap.
No way.
Yeah, man. Absolutely, dude. Good.
Well, you know, if I could throw to a game, I hope you got to catch as much of it as I did. But honestly, extremely entertaining game from this past weekend was the Indy Seattle game.
Oh, the Indy Seattle game was ridiculous. And no, it's a good topic jump, right? I mean, we kind of know what's going on over there in Kansas City, but. Seahawks and Colts, dude. Seahawks starting off the season 4-0. Great start. I think that's their best start ever. And the Colts are plucky, man. Yeah. Not an easy out. And I think it's fair. I think we both know that Seattle's a different animal at home because of the home field advantage and how difficult that is for other teams. The Colts are good. I don't know that I'm going to say the Colts are great, but the Colts have beaten both the 49ers and the Seahawks. And I think most people look at the 49ers and the Seahawks as two of the best teams in the NFL. So if you're talking about, you know, your repertoire, your football checklist of are you legit or are you not, like Philadelphia beating the crap out of the Redskins, that's not really – what does that win mean?
No.
The Colts beating the Seahawks and beating the Niners? Yeah.
Means a lot.
Yeah. That's that's pretty legitimate, dude.
It was highly entertaining from start to finish. I've told you many times I really like Seattle, but I like the Colts too, and I was actually rooting for the Colts in this one. Luck made some fantastic throws. I mean, he was my MVP, I'd say. He was the person that impressed me the most. I mean, I've seen plenty of things out of him that I've liked before, but I mean, this was obviously a huge game, one that they wanted immensely. T.Y. Hilton, obviously, you know, his first real big breakout game of the year. While sitting on my fantasy bench. Woo!
Nice job. Nice job, buddy.
Thank
really?
You.
Really? Exciting. On the bench? Exciting. On the bench?
Thanks, T.Y.
Yeah.
Whoops. Yeah. Try to play the matchup. Seattle defense, nasty. All right, let's let me on the bench. That's one of those times is, what are you going to do?
No, I mean, realistically, most people probably did the same thing unless they had a real shortage thanks to, like, bye weeks.
Right.
I'm going to fail horn you anyway, though.
I'll take it. Just for good measure.
I think you also had another high producer on your bench somewhere.
Ruben Randall.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, what? Now, him you should have played, right? Because it was against the freaking Eagles, dude.
Yeah.
That one you should have had in there.
He just said he hadn't been getting the ball much yet. And then, of course, he decides to take this game to do it. But
what are you going to do? But back to the Colts and the Seahawks. Look, I mean, Seattle came out of the gates very strong. I was a little bit worried for Indianapolis, actually, out of the gate because they had the blocked punt. They really could have had a touchdown there, but they ended up with the safety. But, I mean, they're out 12 to nothing really quickly.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, whoa. But the Colts absolutely have a lot of fight in them. I think this is a reflection of Pagano. I think it's a reflection of Andrew Luck and certainly a young team that's got some upside to it. They have fight in them. And you have that 73-yard touchdown bomb to T.Y. Hilton on your bench. Yay! And then the Colts end up blocking Stephen Hauschka. I always have a hard time saying that guy's name. I'm like, Hauschka? Hauschka Menzada? Are they related? No, I'm just kidding. Stephen Hauschka. They block a field goal attempt. They run that back for a touchdown. You end up having it being 14-12 Colts. It's a game, dude. I was really worried about the Colts early. I was like, miniature Seahawks, Legion of Boom. You're going to have a whole bunch of Seahawks fans running their yaps, you know, blah, blah, blah. Nope. Here come the Colts, baby.
Well, I'd say in the dictionary of, like, momentum swing plays.
Right.
I'd say a block field goal for a touchdown is pretty much as high as you can get. That's epic. That doesn't happen very often.
No.
So that was a huge, huge momentum swing. They had to have something like that.
That's also a big effort play. You know what I mean? When you have that kind of stuff happen, that's scheme, that's effort, that's execution, and you know they had some hustle, man. The Colts are not going to be an easy out for anybody. Particularly if you have to play them in Indy. So I definitely dig that.
I don't think either of us are huge on Richardson, to be honest. And I mean, I know they just lost Bradshaw for the season. So, I mean, obviously that Richardson was going to be the guy anyway. Bradshaw, you know, would become a secondary. But, you know, they got to have some kind of running game. And I don't know if it's just not quite clicking there yet. I think I'm a little bit more of a believer in Richardson than you are.
But I think Trent Richardson's name is bigger than his game.
And I would agree with that.
All right, and whether that's fair or not, look, the numbers on the field don't really support, you know, to me, Trent Richardson being an elite level guy. 18 carries, 56 yards in that game, nothing phenomenal. Again, that's against the Seahawks. I mean, that's a tough team to run on.
Oh yeah.
So, but if you look at the season as a whole, obviously, not exactly a strong start in Cleveland. They do get traded, Trent Richardson gets traded to the Colts. Everybody goes, woo, this is going to be great. You know, think of all the weapons they have. Maybe they're not built that well for that kind of run game yet, but it is kind of odd if Donald Brown has a significantly higher yards per carry average than you do.
It is.
That's just kind of a side thought. I mean, you know, it's a little bit weird, but it's still early, relatively speaking, and I'm sure there are some schematic things and play calls, et cetera, that as the season unfolds, I think we'll have a better read on what that is. I don't know that Trent Richardson has the ceiling that a lot of people thought he was going to have coming out of college. To me, he didn't really show it in Cleveland. And from what we've seen so far against, you know, other opponents as a member of the Colts, solid, not spectacular. I mean, has he had a nice run here and there? Yeah. you know, he's a grinder, right? He's a big grinder. He's a big hammer. And to me, he's the kind of guy, as, if they get a lead, if they get up, they can pound the crap out of you with him. But I'm not looking for Trent Richardson to uncork a, you know, 65-yard touchdown run.
Right.
And I don't know. They've got enough there that maybe they don't have to worry about that. He's a strong running back. And, my God, given the number of injuries they've had at the running back position, I mean, if that guy stays healthy, that itself is a win.
True.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. I think one of my favorite moments in that game, it was in the fourth quarter. This is one of those catches with Hilton. You know, Luck scrambled around, and he makes a really nice throw. And Hilton makes this phenomenal. It's just such a clutch catch. It looks like his feet's coming out from under him, and he's all falling down. He makes his catch. I mean, that was a beautiful throw, beautiful catch in a very, very critical situation. And I don't know. Again, that's one of those things. I think it just shows kind of the moxie this team has, and they have a knack for making some big plays and getting things done when it matters the most. And I think that's a very, very critical component for any team. If you're going to have, let's say, long-term success in the league and some continuity, you have to be able to get it done in tough moments. So, and I think they're able to do that. I think they're able to do that, and they've shown that consistently.
I think our buddy Randy Giles may feel like I'm taking...
Go ahead.
I think our buddy Randy Giles may feel like I'm taking digs just for the sake of taking digs, but you know, we've talked a handful of times about Kaepernick and how I think both of us worry a little bit about his ego, worry about his head getting a bit too big, and that he...
And it's probably gotten knocked down a couple of pegs from the start to this season.
Yeah, I think we're seeing a little bit of regression. He's still a damn talented quarterback, so I'm not completely knocking him. But Luck is somebody who I had really high expectations for in a second season, and he's producing. I mean, I just think that he's clearly getting better and better. You know, and talking about guys who maybe aren't quite hitting their ceiling of what people expected, like Richardson, T.Y. Hilton is somebody who genuinely, you know, wowed me last year, and I was anxious to see if he could follow it up and keep getting better as well, and he certainly has. I mean, he like I said, he hadn't really had much of a breakout game yet this season, but I don't think it was, you know, by lack of, you know, him failing. I just think he hadn't really getting as many targets. But Reggie Wayne, obviously he can't play forever, so no. You know, they need somebody to follow him up, and I think Hilton is absolutely going to be that guy.
Well, you know, it's really tough. I think there's a lot of quarterbacks we look at, you know, coming out of certain – just the past couple of years, there's a lot of young guys that have a lot of upside. But Andrew Luck probably came into the NFL as one of the most polished college passers that, you know, that you're going to see.
Oh, yeah, and a phenomenal quarterback IQ.
Right. You know, I mean, he's got all the tangible – oh, I got somebody at the door. Hold on. Hey, dog's running off, barking, all kinds of crap just happened. Here, hold on a second. I'll be right back.
All right.
Speaking of intangibles. Hold on. Holy moly, Mark. We had a podcastus interruptus.
We did.
And door went off, and lo and behold, the fantasy fail horn randomly showed up at my house. So we are being joined out of the blue in the basement. That's right. By the one, the only, the fail horn himself. Say hey.
What's up, gentlemen? How y'all doing today?
Doing all right, dude. Doing all right, man. Yeah, I'll even give you a little song like randomly during our mini brew session. So what you want? I guess we want some fantasy info. Nice. That's all you have to say? What's up, gentlemen? And that's it? Okay, well, thanks. All right, well, back to what we were talking about. We'll see if you can certainly pipe in as we get on this. We were talking about Andrew Luck, how polished he is, and really the comparison with some of the other young quarterbacks in the league. And I really think what you're starting to see is a separation out with some of the young guys and some of the limitations of their games, right? With Kaepernick, some of that is going to be a passing issue. That is not an issue with Luck. Now, granted, he does have certainly a nice some nice weapons in Indy. T.Y. Hilton, the maturation of him, he's a big play guy. You've got your steady guy in Reggie Wayne, who obviously has great body control, knows how to do certain things. You know, he's in a really good situation, but he executes very well. Then you talk about someone like Russell Wilson, very calm, very cool, very collected, certainly a guy that can extend plays and get a lot of things done. Great mindset, certainly what I interpret as a high football IQ. You know, and then you start jumping to Kaepernick, you start looking at Griffin, and what you're seeing are opportunity spaces where some of these other guys need to refine their passing game. This is also going to be true for Cam Newton, by the way. They have ability and they've got talent, but their games aren't as complete, right? I think Luck and Wilson are very complete. And really, by the time we get a little bit later in the season and say Percy Harvin comes back, which I hope he does. I hope he's actually able to come back and play and contribute this year.
Oh, yeah.
There's still some reservations about that. I think he's chomping at the bit to get back out on the field. But
they're saying about week 10.
We'll see. Hearing. Yeah, we'll see if he actually is healthy and can looks like Percy Harvin should look. Coming back from that, what was it, a hip flexor?
Yeah.
Coming back from that surgery on his hip. But, it, you know, Luck, top down, when you're talking about extending plays, making throws, reading defenses, to me, bar none, is the best of this very young bunch and is looking at just really at a tremendous career. But I think the takeaway from that, when you look at, Newton and Kaepernick and Griffin, and not so much Wilson, I think Wilson really is the real deal. I don't think anybody is going to quite do what, you know, Luck does as far as a pure passer. But I think Wilson is going to be a very good player, very good starter in the league. Cam Newton, there's some ugliness there when you talk about the passing game. And Kaepernick, I think we have to realistically temper what our expectations were coming into the season, particularly until they get their other wide receivers back. I think that's going to open up a lot for them. But still, their identity is as a power team. Power run, impose our will, drop the hammer on you, and set him up through the rest of the game. I don't think that, you know what I mean? You don't have to do that for Luck. Luck, actually, to me, is a guy that can carry a team. Flat out.
I heard a stat last night on NFL Access. Out of the 15 games Andrew Luck's been in, he's had 9 fourth-quarter comebacks.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Ridiculous. A lot of these young guys have had a lot of fourth-quarter comebacks. I mean, Matt Ryan had his share. He's obviously older than Luck. But, Wilson, I think, has several. Luck has several. I mean, that's something that's so critical with a young quarterback, particularly on a team. You know, we've talked about it before. When we were talking about Matt Schaub earlier, one of those things that's very critical is belief in the conviction that you have in your teammates that you're going to find a way to get it done and to win. And, you know, I think that's a risk for Houston. And what you see is a certain amount of confidence with Indianapolis and Andrew Luck or Seattle and Russell Wilson. Look, it doesn't mean they're going to get it done every time. That just doesn't happen. You know, Wilson had an interception to essentially end that game.
Right.
But what it does mean is that when you're in a tough game, a close game, your team has belief that you will find a way to get it done. Right. It's actually kind of funny in a way. This sets up perhaps one of the cruelest games of the week, which was also one of the most fun games of the week. And that's going to be, of course, the Broncos and the Cowboys. That, to me, was really the game I was looking forward to the most. Only because I expected it to be a shootout. I didn't know it was going to be that kind of shootout. I want to say they scored the 4th highest point total in NFL history.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Just bananas. Just bananas. But we're talking about, you know, belief and this idea that you can find a way to win and you get it done late. And what do we get on the other end of the spectrum? We get the Tony Romo issue. And it's really a shame because, to be fair to Romo, that offense was electric that day.
It was the best game ever, period.
That was a phenomenal, phenomenal game by the Cowboys from an aerial attack standpoint. Dez Bryant ate up the Broncos secondary. Yeah. I mean, Terrence Williams had a huge game. It was ridiculous. Romo, 506 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 pick. It's just obviously the pick is the really cruel one at the end. Passer rating of roughly 140. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Played essentially mistake-free football for about 58 minutes of the game. I mean,
right.
for the most part, and
right.
then, but I mean, that's so. I mean, that says a lot of things. Obviously, you can't have it, and I mean, you know, mm-mm. by all rights, Cowboys could have and maybe even should have won.
Well, you know, it was funny early when the Cowboys got off to the 14-0. You know, they're up in that game, and I swear to you, I'm sitting there, I'm watching Denver, I'm watching Peyton Manning and how they're running that offense, and it really felt like Peyton almost took that personally. Like, he took offense to that, if that makes
right.
any sense.
Because
mm-hmm. there was a really big difference in kind of the tempo and the conviction. And I just felt like Denver knew what they needed to do, and they were absolutely resolute in how they handled, you know, their offense. And they just went right down the field, dude. And they were like, we're coming back. This is our game, man. you fine. You're up 14 points. Doesn't matter. Flip the switch. We're coming for you. Can you stop us? Can you hold us off? And they traded blows. You know, this is, again, one of these games where it's great to throw all these like random cliches out to get that done. And they traded offensive blows for the bulk of the game. I mean, to me, I'll be honest with you, I felt like I was watching like the live action Madden, you know, 25. Like, there's a couple people playing this. You know what I mean? It's just that kind of ridiculous. I mean, I cannot remember a game. And you can complain about the defense. I think that's fair. Where was the defense in this game? Nowhere. Nowhere, yeah. Right? But from an offensive standpoint, that was like a work of football art on the offensive side of the ball. Just beautiful.
Yeah. And I mean that really, I think, in so many ways highlights, and we've talked about the Broncos a lot the last few weeks, and for good reason. I mean, this is just unbelievable football they're playing. The level they're at is just, I can't remember the last time I've seen a team this on point, and they still are missing players on defense.
Yeah.
But
they're still not complete yet.
Exactly.
They don't have everybody there yet.
But I think this just pinpointed, I mean, again, the Cowboys played just about mistake-free football for 58 minutes, and they still couldn't win the game. And that's just what's so scary. I mean, we haven't seen somebody come this close to beating the Broncos yet this season. And once again, the Cowboys very well should have won the game.
Now, look,
they couldn't finish it.
In the podcast the other week, I joked around, and I said the Cowboys were the cream of the NFC East crap. So they were the cream of the crap. Because, you know, look, I think the NFC East is garbage.
It is.
We talked about the AFC West earlier, you know, in the show, and that's a much more complete division.
Yeah. I hate admitting it, but right now it is the Cowboys' division to lose.
It's an outrage.
It is. It is an outrage. But you know what? At the end of the day, the Cowboys, and we're going to find out a lot this Sunday night when they play the Redskins. I'll tell you why. For the Cowboys to have that kind of a loss, and I'm a big believer that there are defining moments in any given season. There are moments that help propel you, and there are moments that reveal the character of a team. And sometimes it's not so much the game that you lose, it's what you do after that. Obviously, had they beaten the Broncos, I've long argued that the Cowboys are a confidence team. And when they play well, they play up, they play confident, they can run with a lot of teams, virtually anybody in the league. But what you have are these small margin things that separate out good teams from great teams and great teams from, you know, like Super Bowl caliber teams and eventually, say, a Super Bowl champion. In Denver, when you look at that game, when you talk about the conviction, you talk about attitude and belief and getting things done, they are a team that operates with the belief that they're going to win, in my opinion. Right? The Cowboys, when it gets down to crunch time, I don't think operate with that same level of belief. Some of that is a reflection of the coaching staff. Some of that is a reflection of Tony Romo up to this point in his career. Look, we can talk about the numbers. It's great from a fantasy perspective. It's great for viewers watching it at home. He played a great game. And I think the Cowboys, you have to give them credit, and I will give them credit, and I will give them respect for how they showed up and played that hard. But the story isn't complete. The chapter doesn't end without heartbreak, without the Romoception. And you know, at the end of that game, when it was on the line, that once that ball left his hand, Tony Romo wanted to take it back. But he couldn't. He should have checked down, dumped that off to DeMarco Murray, you know, take the play, extend the drive.
But you also got to look at it. That was a heck of a play on that ball by Trevathan.
Oh, it was a beautiful pick. A beautiful pick. But which one of both of you guys, when you were watching that unfold, were you like, he just gave away the game?
Yep.
Was that not in your head?
Oh, absolutely.
Because it was sure in my head.
Yeah, he gave away the game, but after you hear about everybody talk about it, from what I heard, I forgot who was supposed to catch the ball. He didn't run the ball right. I mean, run the route right completely.
Well, there were also three guys defending back there. There's DeMarco Murray with nobody around him, and there's the other guy with three people around him. But where does Tony Romo go? He goes to the three guys.
Don't be ridiculous.
So you can talk about somebody running the wrong route. I know his foot got clipped when he was
cutting.
You know, when he was in his throwing motion, I understand that, but that ball was still going to that guy.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where Tony Romo was going, period. So as much as I want to give the Cowboys respect for how they showed up in that game, and I think they did earn that, they still found a way to give that game away and to set themselves up. And, you know, as much as they did right, and they did a lot right, they also did other things, you know, poorly. And they gave the Broncos too many chances. Look, they started up 14 to nothing. They had the breaks early. And then they did things over the course of the game. They had a personal foul on Moreno as he was running out of bounds. That sets up a Broncos first down. You know, they have other penalties when they grab Peyton Manning's face. That set up a first and goal. There's things like that. A neutral zone infractions. You know, the defense getting totally snookered. Actually, this is one of my favorite plays of the weekend, man. I love that that Peyton Manning fake bootleg rollout.
Oh,
fake.
My God.
I mean, I don't think there's a person in the stadium that knew that that was actually what was going to happen.
Right.
They sold that so well.
Beautifully.
He could have just jogged in. He could have been on the treadmill for half of that. And still, he still would have gotten into the end zone, man. There was nobody within, just not even close to him. I don't know how fast Peyton is. I'm pretty sure he's not that quick.
No.
So, snookered everybody. But, you know, the thing is, you can't give the Broncos extra opportunities. They're too good. They're too good on offense. And Peyton Manning has too much control of the game, too much mastery of the game. You know, in situations like that, I mean, even the bootleg, that run by him is an example of in-game situational management where they're ahead of the curve. And you can't give them freebies. You can't give them free first downs. You can't give them free possessions. Okay, you have to finish. And finish is what the Broncos did. Because when they get, you know, all of this happens, as you get late in that game, clock's ticking away. You know, we're watching this, and I'm watching NoSean Moreno and Peyton Manning, and they're bickering and going back and forth and arguing, and it's like, dude, they're trying to – I'm telling you, Peyton wants this guy to not go into the end zone. It's pick up a half a yard to get a first down, and then they're going to burn the clock out because they don't want to give the – they don't do not in any capacity want to give the Cowboys the ball back at all. They just don't. Not the way their defense has been playing. Ice the game, get it done, kick a field goal, get the hell out of there. We were convinced of it. What did you find in the post game? Well, there's Peyton Manning talking about how he was telling NoSean Moreno, look, you can't score. Don't score. And Moreno's like, dude, how am I supposed to get like half a yard and not score? How am I supposed to avoid that last yard? But, you know, that's what they did. That is managing the situation. That is managing the moment of the game. And those are the dividing lines that separate out a good team from a great team. And if there's any, you know, if you're going to knock the Cowboys for anything, I will give them respect. I will give them dap. I will give them props for how they played, okay, in the bulk of that game. But what you see is the classic late crunch time mistake and other issues over the course of a game that gave too much to the Broncos. They played a hell of a game, and they could have won that. But the things that tend to bite them in the butt bit them in the butt again, and they didn't finish. They didn't get it done. Peyton Manning and the Broncos did. They handled the in-game situations, those small things, the decision-making, situational management. They did what they needed to do.
Man, NoSean was looking out for us fantasy owners. That's what he was trying to do.
Oh, he was trying to get that touchdown in there?
Yeah, he was trying to look out for us fantasy owners.
Nice. Well, Tony
he's
Romo.
He's a man of the people.
Yeah, he's a man of the people. He's a man, unlike Chris Johnson. He's a man of the fantasy people. So, Tony Romo, you're killing me, dude. Yeah, give away. Yeah, give away. My neighbor got big Peyton Manning had big testicles. finishing that game that way.
But to elaborate on what you were saying,
what?
I think this Redskins-Dallas game is going to mean a lot for both teams.
Oh, yeah.
Tomorrow night, because you got Dallas coming off that such a hard loss. Let's see, and you said their confidence. Let's see what their confidence does.
Right.
And now we want to see what RG3 does. He's got no more excuses now. He's got the bye. The team's ready. Let's go. Let's see what you can do.
Well, here's the thing. There's a couple of tales of the tape, right? There's a couple of issues to look at. And I think it's fair to talk about what Dallas does next after that loss. Again, those are the kind of games that propel, either success or failure, depending on how you respond to them. You know, I've given people the context of some things, and D-Stat, you'll certainly recognize and respect this, certain things that the Giants did several years ago when they gave the Patriots that big-ass game. You know what I mean? And then right. it sets up their playoff run. Same thing's true when you had Green Bay and the Giants playing in a regular season. That was a hell of a football game.
Oh, yeah.
Green Bay wins it, but what do you get in the postseason? So sometimes it's not the game that you lose. It's how you respond to that going forward. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I think the Redskins are a good team because I don't think they're a particularly good team right now. Okay? I don't believe that's the case. Their defense has issues. Their secondary has issues. Their running game hasn't been as strong as it was last year. Griffin obviously is not playing like he did last year when they got on their hot streak. I don't think the team has the same degree of belief, and it's not there. But you can see progression out of them. They do get some people back. They've got a nice pass rush. Historically, they've played Tony Romo fairly well. Dez Bryant was hurt, I believe, the last game that they played, and he was very limited, and that showed. Obviously, he's not hurt right now. So it sets up, look, if Dallas is what they can be and plays to the level that they should, then Dallas should win this game. Period. They have enough on offense, enough on defense, and if they scheme appropriately and handle their business, Dallas should win this game. I'm a Redskin fan, and I'm going to tell you, Dallas should, if they handle their business, Dallas should win this game. If Dallas shows up and they have some kind of regression, if they have some kind of negative rebound after this loss, particularly with a Redskins team where there is some upward progression, particularly if, you know, where RG3 is at in his recovery, you know, he's kind of hitting that point where he should be moving better, running better. Certainly, you've gotten his in-season, preseason, if you will, out of the way and coming off of a bye. So this is a really interesting story, interesting game to look at for how the Cowboys handle that loss and how the Redskins continue to progress. They got them last year.
Twice.
And if they're not careful, they could get them again. Dallas has this weird thing. And, you know, it's funny. There's always a team. And I don't care if it's the NBA, if it's baseball, if it's soccer, NFL, whatever. There are always teams that play up and play down to their competition. And I think Dallas has historically, at least recently, has been one of those teams. And whether you think the Redskins can or should beat them, whether you think the Cowboys can and should beat the Redskins, what you have is a situation here where, you know, the Cowboys don't always handle their business. The Redskins are inconsistent, but they're on a slight upswing, at least from an offensive development and progression standpoint. It's an interesting intersection. This to me is going to tell us a lot about Dallas, how good they really are in respect to that division, because I it's always a little bit skewed. The division is not great. Even though the Giants are 0-6 after another pick party against Chicago, sorry, buddy, and I have decided to, you know, at least for the Giants, I think INTs are now known as Eli NTs. I think that should be an official stat category.
Eli being elite.
Sorry. See, I knew he was going to say it. I knew he was going to say it.
Oh, of course.
I knew Whitfield was going to say that, dude. Whitfield, you are the biggest Eli hater I think that exists on this planet, man.
I think he's probably one of the most overrated quarterbacks.
Well, they can't keep him clean. What's he supposed to do if he's running around for, you know, his life half the time?
There's look, overrated two Super Bowl rings. So yeah, overrated.
So overrated. So overrated. Look, Eli's a
great defense. Come on.
Look. Before this shifts to this big, you know, battle between the two of you guys, look, the problems in New York go beyond Eli Manning. Both of you know that.
Oh, yeah.
Both of you know that. They have protection issues. They've had run issues. You know, they have problems. Eli Manning throwing all the picks is a symptom of some of that. Some of those are bad decisions by him. Some of those are really come down to that team having to press on offense because the defense is not holding up their end of the bargain.
Well,
offensive
the
line
lines
is not
are the problem. That's what everybody's saying. It's the offense and defensive lines are killing them.
Well, they are.
Kiwanuka's not doing anything. JPP's not doing anything.
They're not right. No, they're not right.
Three of the four corners are hurt. I mean,
they
it's a
have
bit
problems.
Of everything.
And Mark's like,
bull crap.
No. It's probably not like bull crap. Well, yeah. This season, you might feel like the season is
bull crap.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I will say this.
But what?
If Dallas loses the game tomorrow night, that division is wide open.
Well, look, to be fair, The Giants are 0-6. They're only two games out of first.
I know.
Okay. So that division is wide open virtually no matter what. And I think I don't care if you're an Eagles fan, a Cowboys fan, a Redskins fan, whatever. You can probably look at it and say, God, as ugly as this is, if we can somehow get to 8-8, we might be able to win this freaking thing.
This might be St. Louis and Seattle all over again, 8-8, and you get
yeah, this is ugly.
Yeah. I mean, I would not be surprised if the Giants went on a roll and maybe made it 8-8, 9-7.
Dude, there's no way in hell they're getting to 9-7. No.
I mean, Peter King said 4-12, 5-11, and I think that was being a little harsh.
Well, they've got a lot of ills to cure. I'll tell you what, let's finish our thoughts on the Redskins and Cowboys real quick. We can talk about the Giants for a minute. Big issue, I really want to see how the Redskins respond coming off the bye week. They finally got their first victory against Oakland. Obviously, I've given the AFC West some credit. Most people aren't going to look at that win as being but so credible since they've had some other issues. But at some point, you have to win your first game, unless you're the Giants. At some point, you have to win your first game. I'm just kidding. Mark.
That's okay.
And they did that. So that's going to help them. There's opportunity. The bottom line is if you're a team in the NFC East, there is opportunity in front of you. Period. So you want to see them get that done. And I really think at the end of the day, we've talked about the identity for the 49ers and what they needed to do to go ahead and get back to some degree of normalcy and get ready and get back to their identity. I think that's also true for the Redskins. And one of the things that we have to see quite bluntly, quite clearly, is the Redskins have to reestablish the run game. Okay, they have to do it. I actually used this in a lost podcast. We did it really late night. This will never got published. But you know what? It still holds true. That was from week one. All right? We're well past week one. But the line holds true. Okay. RG3, from the captain to you, my friend. You got to break your rusty cage and run, baby. Wait a second. Is that like Rusty Brace? Bottom line, got to run, baby. Alfred Morris, got to run. Roy Helu, hello, gotta run. RG3, gotta run, baby. Okay, that was their identity last year, man. The run set up everything else, the threat of the run, the actual run set up everything else for them. They have to get back to that component of their identity. It's going to serve them quite well. I know that RG3 wants to be a pocket passer. I understand it, dude. Let your game evolve and develop. But embrace the things and the strengths of the team, of the identity. Do what you do well. It will set up the rest of the pass game. I'm telling you, I'm not a head coach. I'm not. But I firmly believe the run, the threat of the run, and those things will set the passing game up to help RG3 do some of the things he wants to do to show that he can actually be a passer. But that team needs that offense to be clicking. It's a nice opportunity for them against Dallas because Dallas' defense is not great.
I don't know. You could be a head coach. Grow a goatee out.
Yeah, grow a goatee out and yell.
Yeah, you'd be looking like Rob Ryan.
Oh, all right. Well, look, we're going to have to get D-Stat to his actual job in a couple of minutes, so we're going to start wrapping up. A couple of fun thoughts. I don't know how much, what do you have, like 5 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes?
Yeah, we'll wrap up. We're good.
We're going to do a two-minute drill. Okay. So a couple of different things. Number one, in Tampa Bay, is it okay if I say, Lord have mercy? Can I say that?
You may.
Or is that wrong? Can you please get your locker room freaking clean?
It's bizarre.
I mean, yes. God bless, dude. You got Carl Nix having issues with MRSA. You got Lawrence Tynes having issues with MRSA. And they got another freaking guy. Lord have MRSA E, will you please get that place clean and get your players healthy? Holy crap, dude. How many millions of dollars are you talking about in an NFL freaking facility? And you guys cannot handle that? It is ridiculous. And yes, I picked out a song for the Tampa freaking Bay freaking Buccaneers. A little saliva. This song, wonderfully known as Your Disease. And their disease, apparently, MRSA.
MRSA.
Lord have mercy.
Terrible. MRSA. Lord have MRSA E. seriously, guys, get that crap cleaned up. As for the Giants, we've talked about a lot of good breaks and bad breaks. And Mark, I'm a Redskin fan. I make no bones about it. I try not to be a crazy homer on the show. We've gone a lot of weeks. I haven't even talked a whole bunch about the Redskins. Okay.
Right.
Mercifully, Lord have mercy. Mercifully for me, my friend, the Redskins didn't play this past week. All right. So I thoroughly got to enjoy the bye week without hardly any stress. I like bye weeks. Your team is weak.
True.
Really?
Every week's a bye week in New York.
Oh, that's cold. That's all right. Clay Matthews has a whole bunch of bye weeks coming up.
Yeah, less than a month.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hope he can get back on the field pretty quickly. But, you know, there are times that you're looking at your team and you know you're getting bad breaks. And a couple different things. Number one, in that Eagles game, as you're getting late into that, the Giants had a lead. I want to say it was in the third quarter. They were actually up 21-19 after that second touchdown to Reuben Randle.
Yes.
And Eli, essentially, there's a whole bunch of pressure. He gets a hand to the face, which is not called, by the way. Is not called. He goes to throw the ball. The ball ends up hitting one of his offensive linemen in the back of the head, bounces up, flies in the air, and the Eagles pick it off. Sets up a Nick Foles touchdown. And, of course, he has another INT that pretty much seals the game, seals the deal. But, I mean, that's there are some bad breaks, bad bounces going on in New York, man. That is rough.
Very.
That is rough. And as far as the Giants-Bears game on Thursday night, yeah, the Giants started out of the gate a little bit ugly. I get that. But I really thought the Giants were able – I thought they did some things actually quite well on offense.
Brandon Jacobs looked good.
Brandon Jacobs looked like a monster. I mean, it felt like that dude was, like, I don't know, 10 years younger. It was ridiculous. A lot of added – well, this is what you want to see out of Brandon Jacobs, right? You want to see him truck somebody. Guess what? He did it. You want to see him run hard and stick his shoulder in the people. You want to see him pick up those tough yards. Well, that offense has been screaming for some kind of a running game, some semblance of a running game to help get, I don't know, just some continuity, get some tough first downs and get rolling. I think the offense actually moved the ball fairly well over the bulk of the game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but they just had a couple of really cruel things. Obviously, the pick six by Tim Jennings. Look, that's just an ugly start. But the Giants had some fight in them. And I told a couple of people that it was good to see. What did I call it? I said Brandon Jacobs got out of the hit tub time machine.
Yeah.
Not the hot tub, the hit tub. It's all trucking on people. All right. That's what they need. The Giants desperately need the run game. And unfortunately, and I know this is tough for the Giants because unfortunately, as great as Brandon Jacobs was, I don't know that you can count on him to be like that game in and game out. That would be lovely for you as a Giants fan. That would be phenomenal. But I think the bigger issue here is that it's clear that the running game is critical for them to kind of turn some things around, and they have their struggles. I get it. You get it. We all know that. It's a little bit scary at the particular moment because they need David Wilson to come in and be complimentary for Brandon Jacobs. Unfortunately, Wilson has a neck injury, and there's some reports coming around that doctors think he has spinal stenosis. And for anybody that's not familiar with that, that's essentially what Cooper Manning had. And Chris Samuels had that late in his career after a neck injury. I mean, that's one of those things you have to be very careful with. And if it's really that bad, that might be a career ender. Not just a season ender, but a career ender for David Wilson.
Right.
And that sucks.
It's brutal.
That's absolutely cold. Cold. So I don't know. Have you heard anything different, Mark?
No, I've heard, you know, more tests on Monday. So that's, you know, it's scary. I, you know, obviously complained about his, you know, fumbles as everybody else did. But, you know, I said all along, I certainly had faith in him long term.
Right.
You know, he's got to fix that. But the guy's got, you know, some really good, you know, really amazing ability. You know, it certainly can break out at any moment with his speed and break long runs. You know, work on the fumbles and that's, you know, and work on the pass blocking. But He had a ton of potential, was probably a little too quick in putting him in the role of being the man.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, really, I mean, no matter what, but you know, I wouldn't want to see anybody suffer this kind of injury. But, you know, just hoping that it's, you know, not as severe.
Well, I've heard something earlier today on my ESPN Insider.
Oh, well, thanks for plugging ESPN. I mean, what the hell is that, dude?
But
they don't sponsor
I've
us.
Heard the Giants have some interest in MJD.
That would be very interesting, actually.
It would be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a contract year. He's on the wrong side of 30, but he doesn't fumble the ball.
He's still a
pretty good runner, and I think.
The other week we talked about, you know, MJD getting the heck out of Jacksonville, and I think it's going to happen, dude. Even if it's not this year, even if it's not a trade, I think he's gone. I mean, he's paid his dues. He's done his time.
Absolutely.
Like, he's done his hard labor in Jacksonville. He needs
to
get out.
Hard labor.
You know what I'm? Yeah, it's been a lot of hard labor, buddy.
Having said that.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I know you have to get to work. So we're gonna go ahead and do a little quick wrap up. As always, we appreciate everybody jumping in and diving in and goofing off with the brew. It's always fun. 0-6, dude. I know it's painful. I've lived through some really really ugly years as a Redskins fan. I empathize. You know, on some level with you, but you know, you'll find that at this point when you're looking at the games, you're going to start looking for different kind of things that they're doing right, and you're going to look bigger picture. It's less about this year, and it's more about, you know, what kind of identity does this team still have, and what kind of direction do they need to go to in the future. But I thought they had some fight in them, and that's going to be really important if anything is going to come out of this year. I don't believe they can flip a switch and recover this season. I think it's too far gone for that. The division is ugly. There's opportunity, sure, but I'm not going to give you any kind of false pretense and, you know, some BS. Watch, they're going to make a Super Bowl run. I mean, I think that's off the table, okay? Same thing with the Falcons. You know, that's a team. I just don't think it's there for them this year.
Not in that division.
No, definitely not in that division. Losing to Julio Jones, Roddy White's hurt, has hamstring problems. You know, it's tough. There are some years it just doesn't feel like it's meant to be. And this is one of those years for the Giants and for the Falcons, and there's other teams too, for Jacksonville definitely, although I don't think anybody had any real thoughts that Jacksonville is going to be that good. And I know they're easy to pile on. I get it. They're easy to pick on, but it's just there are times it's just not there, and the bounces are bad. The play, you know, you see something good and you see something disastrous, and, you know, a couple of games you have just really cold picks late at the end, man. Just it's a game of inches, and you have even late with the Giants, man, they're so close, dude, so close. And Eli overthrows Myers, and there's another Tim Jennings interception, third of the game. It's just killer. I will tell you this, though, one of my favorite lines from the game, the Giants were driving and they were running really well, and Mike Mayock said, "This is a soft box." So on that note, I guess we're going to wrap up and get out of here. And that's what she said. So, as always, that was for MacGuffin, since he's a big TWSS kind of guy.
Well, let me throw in real quick, just because you're talking about my Giants, and I wanted to give a few quick words.
Okay.
You know, I've you know, thrown in the towel and expecting, you know, a big turnaround this year.
Right.
It could happen, and I'll never, you know, I joke with you. The company I work for anybody who doesn't know, I work from home, kind of telecommunications work, and the company I work for is based out of Denver. So I said, I'll be a Broncos fan. Why not?
So don't give me that crap.
Denver does not want you.
No deal. No.
I'm a loyal fan. I'll never give up on my team. I described to you. I kind of went through a bunch of different stages. Went through, you know, anger, went through bitterness.
Stop
all
it.
That. Exactly. I've come to rest at acceptance now, because you know what? They've had so much great success of the last many years. Two amazing Super Bowl wins. The first one in particular against the Patriots, my single favorite, you know, sports moment ever in life. So I mean, I can't be a bitter fan. Can't be a whiny fan. Like
Stop
you said,
whining.
Look for positive signs. Look for some improvement, hopefully, and you know, see what happens in the years to come.
Well, you must be very proud of yourself. Tonight.
That's awesome, man.
Listen to me very carefully.
This man is totally insane.
How did you get that?
All right. Well, on that note, that was pretty fun. Well, we might as well go out with a bang, right?
There you go.
I mean, the dog's barking. Matt's in here hacking up a lung. You have to get to work. Good grief, man. We got all kinds of junk going on in here.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy. Anyway. All right, dude. Well, as always, thanks to everybody for listening in, jumping in with our BS, our rants, our crap. We didn't get to everything that we wanted to get to, but we're going to consider this a mini brew. I'm going to try to turn this around pretty quickly, get this posted. And who knows, maybe later tonight, after Mark gets off of work, we'll record some more. It could happen. It could happen. Although I should probably go and actually do something really productive. maybe. By the way, as we make our exit, this is one of my favorite things of the week. This is, I want to say it was a high school game, and it's a strikeout, and the ump has one of my favorite calls ever to to call this guy out. You ready? I want this guy. I want the dog is barking like mad, dude. I want this guy to be on the sideline for the next Giants game. Because when Eli makes that throw and it hits the defender.
No, but that's what they were. I think that guy was ump during the Braves Dodgers game.
He may have been. Braves Dodgers. By the way, is there a fussier fan base than Atlanta Braves fans?
I know, right?
In baseball? I'm just saying. I'm not anti-Braves, but I swear.
They always cry so much. You know, we got the team this year.
Now, be careful with Whitfield. Not only is he an Eli hater, he also likes to dump all over the Braves. So be very careful when you listen to him talk about anything. Just to be mindful. Okay, no, we got to get out of here. Mark has to get to work. So, much like the Redskins this past weekend, when they were on bye, the Sports Brew also has to say... Bye. That's awful. I can't end on that. I can end on that.
Yeah,
all right, guys. We will catch you a little bit later. And much like Tony Romo, we'll catch you on the flip side. D-Stat, as always, thanks for representing proper. And real quickly, are you taking the points with this Denver Jacksonville game?
I'm taking Denver -27.5.
All right, we'll see if that happens, dude. I do want to see if they have a prop bet for how long Peyton Manning actually plays. I think the prop bets would be so fun out of that one. All right, brother. Maybe we'll catch you a little bit later tonight.
All right, Brew Nation.
Cool. Peace out, y'all.
Whoop whoop.
You. Yeah. All right, Mark, we'll catch you later, bro.
All right, later, folks.
Woo. Yo, exit. There it is. There it is. There it was. There it went.
Woo. There it is.
That's right, baby. All right, y'all. From all of us to all of you, enjoy your weekend. We'll catch you next time here at the Sports Brew, baby. Peace out.